You are Locked On NBA Draft, your daily podcast on the NBA Draft. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Yo, yo, what is up? What is up? You are listening to Locked On NBA Draft. This is your host, Rafael Barlow from NBA Draft Junkies and the new director of scouting for NBA Big Board. Shout out to each and every person that has made Locked On NBA Draft your first listen of the day. I really appreciate it because in this case, or most cases, it's on a Monday. And on Mondays, it is the first listen of the week. But then on Tuesdays, I have my guy, Richard Stamen, who just happens to be a guest today. But before I get into that, let's talk about Bet Online. Actually, the Bet Online is the sponsor for today. And Bet Online has you covered this season with more props, odds, and lines than ever before. Bet Online is where the game starts. All right, I have my guy, Richard Stamen, aka Mavs Draft, a fellow Dallas resident. I mean, I live in Dallas when I'm in Dallas. I haven't really lived there for more than a week in the past, I guess, 5 or 6 months. Man, what is going on?
Hey, it's, college basketball's over and now we're fully in draft season. And I'm sure you're seeing it just as much as I am, all the overreactions to one game. It's really exciting.
Yeah. And, you know, on one hand, I'm kind of glad that college basketball is over. Now it's like, I feel like your big board should be, at least in my opinion, it should be stable, because only way somebody's stock goes up, unless you're just rewatching film, which, you know, that is possible, or if you're just reading about what a guy's doing in workouts, which you're basing that off other people's information. So maybe it can move a little bit based off of coming back around and watching guys. I know, like for me, there's some guys that I have to go back and watch their film because I haven't watched it since December and seeing if there's some changes. But in today's episode, I want to talk to you about the ESPN rankings from 2021. And so a lot of these players are going to be in the draft coming up in June. All right, so I'm just go by the top five. All right, ESPN had Chet Holmgren number one. Would you agree that he's lived up to the hype there?
Yeah, I mean, his production was unreal. I think he's definitely number one still.
Number two, they had Jaden Hardy.
That hasn't lived up to it. It's hard though because he went pro. Everyone else went to college on this list for the most part. So that one is hard to fairly one to one. But I mean, his high school tape was pretty nuts.
All right, so let's talk about, what are your thoughts on Jaden Hardy? Do you think in, let's say, 1 year from today, do you think he could be the second best player from the high school recruiting class of 2021? Or do you think that this season with the Ignite was kind of like showed like who he truly is? What are your thoughts on Hardy?
Somewhere in between. I don't think he's got any chance to be the second best player from this recruiting class next year, but I do think the signs we've seen show that he could still stick in the league at some point. I don't know how high, but he does have promise to stay in the league.
Yeah, I mean, at this time last year, maybe even prior to the season starting, there were some people that thought he could have a chance of being the number one pick. There were a lot of rumblings that he'll go to the Ignite and be able to showcase his point guard skills. And if he can play both guard positions, then it will put him in position to possibly challenge for the number one spot. It hasn't happened. In your opinion, have you seen some lead guard skills and passing instincts out of him?
He's had a couple nice flashes. There's been flashes, I'd say mostly since February. Yeah. I think a lot changed for him. But before that, it was very much he was a chucker. And he still kind of is.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's wired to score. I think that's just who he is. He has an advanced ability to create his own shot off the dribble. And I think that he has a role as a shot maker. But it's almost like, is he going to be, I like doing comparisons, but you know, in this world, as soon as you compare somebody to someone that is not like a star, then it sounds like you're being a hater. All right, before I get into mine, who is your best and worst case scenario for Jaden Hardy?
You know, I haven't thought of a one-to-one best and worst case scenario, but I think a real best case right now would probably be Kevin Porter Jr. to some extent, where he's like, he's a score first guard, but he's not going to offer, you know, the playmaking is a work in progress. And then worst case, I can't unsee that he's pretty much if Cameron Thomas went to the G League. That's how I've looked at him pretty much since day one. So somewhere in between those two guys. What about you?
I was thinking somewhere maybe Deion Waiters, where he could have like some flashes. I mean, I think Deion Waiters' issues aren't necessarily basketball related. I mean, we all remember the gummy story. And it's crazy. Like, he's out of the league. He hasn't played since, I mean, he got some minutes in the bubble, but prior to that, he hasn't played. Right after he got the big check. And I haven't even heard like him even getting workouts. So he may be done. But I mean, Waiters is a guy, when he was on, he looked good. Like, he can definitely create his own shot. I mean, he's super confident, which is something Hardy is. You know, Waiters, I think the rumor is his nickname was Kobe Wade because he felt like his game was a combination of Kobe Bryant and Dwayne Wade. And I like the Cam Thomas comparison. I did ask questions like, what is the difference between the two? And I think Hardy has a little bit more passing instincts than Cam Thomas, but Cam was weird for me to evaluate because you couldn't deny the numbers. And, you know, you kind of think of him as a chucker, but then you're like, he was getting to the free throw line like seven times a game. And I made the joke on draft night. I can't wait to see him wave KD off and shoot like a contested step back. He may or may not have done it this year, but that is an interesting comparison, even though I think Hardy does have a little bit more passing instincts. All right, the third player that ESPN had in their rankings was Imani Bates. Now, did you get a chance to watch Bates at all this year in Memphis?
You know, and the least, I don't mean what I'm about to say in a like condescending way, but unfortunately, yes, because I think it was just a terrible situation for him. You know, Memphis, once he went down at the end of January, they were the second best team, I think, in college basketball from then until the close of the season, until the March Madness. That was a horrible experiment. I think he has to go to the G League next year or transfer somewhere else.
You think so? So it's like, on one hand, he is 17 or was 17. Or I think he still is. So, I mean, you can kind of expect him to struggle. I think that he is a victim of the hype that people put on him, not necessarily him. He's never going to live up to the young KD comparisons. And I went to watch him play in Dallas, I guess, 2 years ago. And I thought he played well, but everywhere in the crowd, you kept hearing about what he's not, who he's not. And I think it's kind of unfair that it was an adult that wrote the article that put this pressure on this 14-year-old kid. So he has big shoes to fill. Now, if you were like suggesting where he should go, like what would be your options for him?
I mean, I think the G League is probably the best way just because I think they really emphasize the offensive development that he needs. In terms of college, I don't really know. Somewhere probably with better point guard play, I think would help him a lot. I think that whole Memphis team could have used a real point guard, but
they were trying to turn him into the point guard.
What?
They were trying to turn him into the
point guard. Yeah, exactly. And that was not the right move for him. So yeah. It's hard to say where he should go.
All right, number four, they have Paolo Banchero. And, you know, I've been driving the Banchero bandwagon all year. He is number one on my draft board. Is it, like, shocking to you that ESPN thought that there were three prospects, especially Imani Bates, were better than Paolo Banchero?
Yeah, I don't know how they got that because he's the size and skill combo for a high school player. I mean, that I don't know how that gets number four, because that was the reasoning they used for Chet being number one, was the skill and size. And then Paolo, just a couple inches shorter, obviously whole different games, but that same general principle, suddenly there were three better players than him. So I don't understand that one.
Okay, before we get too deep into this Paolo Banchero conversation, because everyone knows how much I am a fan of Banchero, I want to talk to the listeners about Bet Online. Because BetOnline.net is your number one source for all of your betting needs and sports info. You can find all of the latest sports developments, including this week's Masters odds, podcasts, and reviews for all the different leagues this season. BetOnline is your continued source for all of your sporting wagering information, which includes live betting, esports, and scores. So head to the website today and use your mobile device to learn more about the trends in action. BetOnline it's where the game starts. Thank you so much for making Locked On NBA Draft your first listen of the day. Now, for your next listen, I'd advise you to check out the Locked On Now podcast. It gives you nightly recaps of every NBA game with analysis from our local experts. It's free, and it is available wherever you get your podcasts. Let's talk about this. All right, let's say me and you were identical, right? We had the same exact skill sets. I was a buck 95, and you were 250. It's almost like they would say I have a bigger upside because I'm skinny. And it's almost like they would hold it against you for being NBA ready.
Developed.
Do you feel like that's what's going on?
To an extent, yes. People definitely punish players for being developed earlier. And somehow it's seen like a negative thing. And I just don't understand that personally.
Yeah, I mean, we heard it with Luka. Oh, he's close to his upside. Is he going to get better? And I remember like having this argument after his second season, a guy argued me up and down saying he's not going to get any better. He is who he is. I'm like, okay, if he stays the same, it's 28, 8, and 8. Like, what's wrong with that? Like, do you think someone from that class is going to be better than 28, 8, and 8 outside of maybe Trae Young? No. So I think, yes, yeah, it's almost like there's such a love for raw, skinny, athletic prospects. And I'm almost to the point now, it's like, why even play a season? Just go straight to the combine. Of course I want to see it, but you're starting to see guys that just have these physical traits and they're getting a lot of buzz with zero production, which leads me to Patrick Baldwin Jr. Where do you have PBJ on your board?
That was one of the best transitions I've ever heard, by the way. It, man. you know, I had him around 20, but he keeps dropping. I haven't finalized a spot for him. It's tough because he's a 6'9 shooter who has beautiful.
Is he a shooter?
That's what I was about to say. He is a shooter who doesn't make a lot of shots. It's a false label to an extent. He has beautiful form, but at some point, does the form not really matter when it's not going in? I mean, Ben McLemore has incredible form.
Ben Wallace had great free throw form. It looked like he had touch.
Yeah, and it doesn't matter. And even the crazy thing is, like, he's never had the numbers, I feel like. In the FIBAs, he only shot 32%, and everything, and I mean everything, was handed to him on a silver platter. And then in the Horizon League, he couldn't do anything. Like, that's incredibly worrisome.
So why do you still have him at 20? Is it the upside? Or this is what I like to ask. And I love being in the seat where I'm asking the questions. If you didn't know him, like if there were no pre-draft hype and he was a guy that you never heard of, and I just said, hey, I got this guy I want you to check out, what would your thoughts be?
Well, I like that because that's very objective. And normally that is how I operate because I would be like, this guy's not NBA ready. He's got good tools, but obviously can't play yet. The reason I still have him around 20, though, is that the fact of the matter is teams are always going to give him a ton of chances. He's going to get a ton of benefits of the doubt because of the high school label. And I think he still goes first round. And when you're a first round pick, you're always going to get the extra chances. And then because of that, how many players stick in a draft, like even play 5 years in the league? And it's generally around 25 is the number. Mm-hmm. I think he gets to 25. That's why it's too literal of a phrase, I guess, or ranking. But, you know, on a talent evaluation, he's much lower because, like you said, if you watched him without the labels or, you know, the hype, would you know who he is? Probably not.
Yeah. And that's why I feel like it's such a, it makes draft scouting so difficult in the sense because, I mean, I think there are ways that a player can build their high school hype up. It's like if you're a parent or you're a handler and you got this kid who you think is good, and if you create a major buzz for him on social media and on the ranking services, then you could give him that opportunity to get 5 years in the league. Which is crazy. And I had this argument with my brother. I was like, if you look at some of the best players in the NBA right now, whether it's Jokic or Embiid or Giannis, none of those guys were, you know, like highly regarded. Like it's something about these guys that are underdogs that nobody was looking out for. I mean, you can use Steph Curry to an extent, even though he was like the seventh pick, but he wasn't like super highly regarded coming out of high school. And I think there's something about that, like chip on the shoulder, Damian Lillard, CJ McCollum, or guys like that, that have like an extra drive. And so with all that being said, I just wonder, like, has the media, even though they've been kind of hard on him this year, but has the media put Patrick Baldwin in a situation to where he's going to get 4 or 5 years to get it right?
Yeah, and that's exactly what I think is going to happen. And it's a really, like you said, it's an unfair advantage. You look at guys like the whole 2011 draft, I think, is the prime example of what you're going for. But Jimmy Butler was the 30th pick. Kawhi Leonard was the 15th pick or somewhere around those. I know Jimmy was 30. I think Kawhi was 15. But yeah, those guys will get tons of chances. Gatorade Player of the Year, if I'm not mistaken, for Baldwin. Like all the hype is there. And it is a little bit unfair to guys who have better skill sets that are just going to hop between G League and NBA. He's always going to be in the NBA because the tools and the hype.
And a guaranteed contract, you know, if he's the first round pick. Yeah, yeah. I don't want to bash the kid. I mean, he could prove me wrong later on. But when I watched him at the FIBA under 19s, I was like, all right, everybody's saying he's a shooter. And then I was looking like, I get it in theory. You see the size, you see how he moves, and then you can visualize him, you know, maximizing his potential. But I mean, he was like a shooter that can't shoot. All right, here's a question for you. Jabari Smith, he was sixth on ESPN's top 100. Where do you have him on your current big board?
I go back and forth on if he should be my number one player or not, because I had Paolo there for the longest time. And then the way he ended the season just really rubbed me the wrong way. So I moved Jabari to number one. So he is my number one player. And I think that's the general consensus. When I talked to a couple NBA teams in March, they said, you know, Jabari's number one.
Yeah.
And I don't know what it is now, though, after the tournament. I mean, Jabari didn't make a run. Paolo did. It's going to be hard. I don't know what to make of the top four entirely. But right now, number one.
Yeah. And then who do you have number two? Ben Carroll?
Yeah. Yeah, Paolo.
See, I've mentioned it before on previous podcasts. When I first saw Jabari, I thought he was Channing Frye. Like, when I watched his high school stuff, he never came inside the three-point line. Like, everything was threes. I didn't see any ball handling skills in the half court. I saw it maybe in transition. He can get a rebound and go coast to coast. But I thought, like, man, this guy is going to be he's going to have a long career as a shooter. Now, in college, he showed me some flashes of being able to score in the post. I think, like, for him, and this is just my opinion, I think he's going to have to study Dirk film. And when Dirk first got to the league, he was all threes in a sense. But then once he transformed from inside out, it just kind of made him, like, just an impossible threat, because he was able to use the silky smooth shooting touch and the high arc to just create his own shot from the mid post, low post. And I think Jabari obviously has that type of touch. I mean, he'll definitely need to get stronger. I mean, Dirk's legs are like tree trunks. But I think that if Jabari is a guy that's going to shoot 8 or 9 threes per game in the NBA, then is he going to be your franchise player, like your closer? And that's my concern about the hesitancy of taking him number one.
Yeah, I have the same issues, because he's not I also don't see a single franchise changer number one option in this whole draft. That's kind of, I guess, my hot take to some extent. No matter who number one is, I don't see them changing the franchise as like the alpha dog. We've also been spoiled by like the last four drafts, but so maybe that's my issue. I think for me, the big thing with Jabari is if you got a 6'10", 3-and-D guy who can do those things at a super high level, I think he's one of the most valuable players. I mean, you look at, for example, and this is a very, very low end player of this, but Maxi Kleber is a 3-and-D guy at 6'10". And he's one of the more valuable players to the Mavs because of that role. I think when you have that size and 3-and-D, and if you're elite at both, you're going to be one of the more coveted players in the league. Like, if the shooting translates and the defense translates, I have no issue saying he's going to probably get a max at some point.
Interesting. But, you know, I wasn't as high on Jaren Jackson Jr. I actually went to like the, what's the game they have in Chicago? The Capital, not something classic, State Farm Classic. I went to that game, and I remember this agent was like, Jaren Jackson Jr., he's going to be that guy. He's like, look how young he is. And I looked at the shot. The shot was kind of funky looking. And I was wrong about him. I thought he was going to, you know, a top five pick. But I think he's in a good situation in Memphis where he doesn't have to be the franchise guy. And he can kind of just be like an all-star level role player. And that may be the role for Jabari. But here's why I think Banchero is going to be a legit franchise changer. I think Banchero's upside is 2018-19 Detroit Pistons Blake Griffin. Remember, Blake was all NBA that year. He wasn't, you know, bouncy Blake, but he was like this mismatch. He was, I think he averaged like 5 assists a game. It was like 24, 8, and 5 or something like that. He was knocking down jumpers, but he was just like this mismatch on the offensive end. He was too strong for if you went small, but then he could handle the ball, make plays. He could get a rebound and kind of initiate the offense. I think if Banchero gets a creative coach, I think that's who he could be. So I think if he is, you know, 18, 19 Pistons Blake Griffin for 8 years, then I think that is your franchise guy.
Yeah, and that's kind of where I am too, because I had him number one for a little bit. I do like the Blake Griffin comparison though. I could definitely see that.
You gotta say Pistons Blake Griffin.
Yes, my bad. Yeah, I'm taking your words out of context. My bad. I'm not trying to twist your words.
Somebody's gonna come. Yeah, Banchero can't jump over a car, you know. All that type of stuff. All right, here's one. Jalen Durant was number 7, which I think he could end up being number 7 in his draft. Caleb Houston was number 8. What are your thoughts on Caleb Houston?
They're not very positive. He's another guy who he's a shooter that can kind of shoot. I like the form, but he has had a ton of bricks, and actually not even just bricks, shots that straight missed the rim. That's really worrisome for me for a shooter. I don't think any guy that's labeled as a high-end shooter should ever be missing the rim on any jump shots, and maybe like, you know, grenades or something at the end of the shot clock's fine. But that really worries me. I also like his pick and roll ability. I think that's really underrated. He's good at passing off of screens. But other than that, I mean, my positives are very short for him. I think he's pretty limited and stiff on defense and can't really create. So I think he tops out as a role player.
Yeah, definitely. And I know like for him, he got off to the slow start. And then I think I was getting ready to not bash him, but, you know, express my concerns on a podcast. And then I looked at his stats and I was like, oh, he's shooting 38% from 3. Like if he would have done that the whole year, then, you know, you would have said that he lived up to the expectations. And then he got cold again and it got down to about 35%. So I'm still kind of leaning on towards second round pick in a sense. All right. Yeah. Here's a couple guys that I feel like ESPN got totally wrong. And if you look at the list, you got Damian Collins, who was top 20. He barely played. You have, AJ Griffin was 29, which he's obviously going to be a top 10 pick. Malachi Branham was 34. Tyrese Hunter was 39. And, I mean, those are just two guys that kind of stand out. Deron Holmes was 46. And then what is your thoughts on Holmes anyway? Do you think he should come out this year?
I think he should test the waters. I've only seen a couple of his games, but I believe he's been blocking shots like crazy. I want to double check this. Yeah, average 2 blocks a game. I like his defense. I think he probably needs an explosion year at Dayton where he just kind of comes out and just volume increases a ton, because he averaged 13 points a game. I think he can get up to around 17 if things go right per game, and I think that would do a lot for him. But he should definitely test the waters.
Now, what are your thoughts on like a Holmes or even like a Patrick Baldwin coming back next year and transferring up?
Well, the Holmes, yes.
Even Amani Bates, even like Amani Bates, do you transfer to a better situation? Because I mean, the transfer portal is ridiculous. Like the last time I saw was like 1,800 or something like that, which is absolutely killing high school kids. Like if you're a high school kid, coaches are probably not even calling you back because they're waiting to see who they can get to come in right away. But do you think any of the guys that were highly regarded that kind of struggled, do you think that they'll use their this college basketball free agency to find a better fit?
I think Holmes can do just fine at Dayton for a second year. Baldwin should absolutely not transfer. I think he needs to get to the pros. His stock probably won't. I just have a hard time seeing it getting higher than what it is. If he's somehow still a first round pick after being horrendous for the last 12 months, go ahead and cash that check. Amani Bates, though, I think he could transfer up. I really don't think his issues were talent based. I don't think he's like, you know, not good enough for a high major, because the American Athletic's the best non-Power 5 conference. Yeah. If you count, or I guess Power 6, counting the Big East, I think he could transfer up and play in any of those conferences.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, I think he would need to just find the right fit. I mean, that's a very cliche answer, but somewhere where you can get up and down. And even though it's a different coach, I always felt like Texas Tech always finds ways when they had Beard to just maximize a player, get him drafted. And then, I don't know. I mean, I honestly feel like they have bigger rims at Texas Tech, because some of the guys that went there were shooters and they have not been able to shoot anywhere else but there. So again, I know the coach is different, but you never know. You put him in Texas Tech and all of a sudden he's, you know, back to where people expected him. All right, here's a question for you. Like, what is your, and I mean, I've seen this on Twitter, but what is your hottest take for the 2022 class? Like, what is something that you stand firm on that is not with the consensus?
All right. So there's a, you know, I think you're actually going to like both of these. And actually I have three, so I'll go kind of quick, 3.5, but I'll kind of power through them because a few of them are European players. So I'm very hopeful that you're on board with these. So number one, Nikola Jovic, I have him very high. I have him still top 10. I think he's a 6'10 creator who I love his shot. If he can create and run pick and roll and spot up at a high level too, at 6'10, I don't care how bad his defense is. And if he's like mediocre at finishing, it's fine. I think he translates and that's a top 10 player. That skill set is ridiculous. I don't know what your thoughts are on Jovic, but
yeah, I like him. I like him a lot, but I have concerns. And I mean, I guess it's a lazy comparison, but my concern with him is if he ends up in the wrong situation, like Denny Avdija, he's not going to look good. Avdija is best with the ball in his hands. Put him in pick and rolls. And actually had a dinner a few weeks back with his agents, and they were just kind of talking about not necessarily bashing the Wizards, but it was like, you know, like not understanding why you draft a guy and then you don't put him in the best position to succeed. Now, again, it is hard because his first year he had Westbrook and Bill, so he was definitely not going to get touches as the ball handler. And then I feel like in the last few weeks, once they kind of gave up, they were bringing him, you know, like off the bench and gave him some ball handling duties. So with all that being said, I feel like if Jokic goes to a team, let's say they have two guys that really need the ball, then you're not going to get the best out of him unless you have like this creative coach like Nick Nurse that just knows how to get the best out of everybody. So that's my biggest concern for him. Like, let's say, I don't know. I mean, let's say he goes to Sacramento. Like, is he going to look good in Sacramento?
No. don't wish that upon him.
Or, I mean, all right, let's say he goes to Orlando, which I don't know. I mean, they won't be taking him that high. Or let's say Atlanta or New York. Like, what team do you think would be a good fit for him?
Honestly, actually, I know that they already have two ball handlers, but I think off the bench, this team could use him, and that's Charlotte. I like the Charlotte fit. Maybe even San Antonio, another creative coach. I mean, if Pop's still there, I think he could do wonders with Jovic. But those are two spots I like.
Yeah, and I mean, fit is so important. All right, what's your second hot take?
Yeah, so my next one is I'm moving down the board a little bit. I don't think this one will take very long because I know you like this player too, but I love Ryan Rollins. I have him top 20. I think he's just mid-major Johnny Davis. The handles are better than Davis. There's an argument that he is a better prospect, but I could just be getting carried away about the competition they're facing. So I'm hesitant on that, but from what I've seen in game, Ryan Rollins, I don't know how hot that is actually, but I just never see his name. So I assume it's hot.
Yeah. Funny story. I had to go to Detroit and I went to Detroit. I forgot what I was doing in Detroit, maybe filming something. And a friend of mine was like, man, you want to ride down to Toledo? And Toledo is like not far from Detroit. And I'm like, sure. We go watch a Toledo versus, I don't know, some school in Iowa. It was like a preseason tune-up game. And that was my first time like watching him live. And that's when I was like, okay. And I'm literally at the game on my phone, just taking notes. But I kind of took like a wait and see approach because I'm like, okay, this is probably like an NAIA school that they're playing against. And he's clearly, you know, head and shoulders better than everyone else. But he has proven to be legit. And it's funny, like the Davis comparison is interesting because I feel like Rollins, I see the comparison, but I feel like Rollins is much more smoother. Like Davis is just, which I like it. I mean, Davis has this motor. He looks like he's playing hard every play. Every cut is with a purpose. But it's like Davis is a guy, when he scores his points, you feel like he went out to go get buckets. Like Rollins seems like he can get 20. Like he's hooping in sweatpants. Like it's just all in the flow of the game. It's just really easy and laid back. So I actually like that. But yeah, I have him as a first round pick. I know when I think I mentioned it on the podcast with Chad Ford, and he was like, who? And he had mentioned later on that he called some NBA scouts and they were like, yeah, we like him too. So I felt like that was a win for me. I kind of got a little respect for that one, kind of putting my name out there.
Yeah, I remember you're the only person I've ever heard bring him up in the same range. I remember you were on, I want to say it was one of the, there's like a whole army of them. You say that. I listened to one of the podcasts you were guest on. It's like Draft Deeper, I think is what you were on.
Yeah.
But you were bringing him up. I've heard him talk about it on all your shows. So I like him. I knew I wouldn't have to sell you. Next one. And you're going to have to correct me on pronunciation because I'm about to Americanize the crap out of this. But Giordano Bordolani, I love his jump shot. And I think he can 1-2 dribble, put it up real quick too. I think he could be a first round pick, like 10 really? At least. Okay. Not necessarily. I don't think he'll get picked. But the jump shot's so nice that he has a case for best shooter in the class. And when you're up there in that conversation.
Yeah.
Probably return first round value.
That's a different one. I mean, I can't say that I've watched a ton of him. I'm actually in Italy now, and he is on my list of guys to watch because I haven't been able to see Prashida live and seen Spaniolo. It's interesting that Italy could have – I mean, they have some talent coming out of Italy. And then on their national team, they should get Banchero. And they have a kid that I really like that's probably going to be in next year's draft, Leonardo Okiki.
Yep.
And they have a lot of talent. Then there's a kid, and I'm probably like way ahead of people. There's a kid born in 2006 that I had a chance to watch named Tifing Diawara. I like him. And I mean, since I've been over here in Europe, I've been going to like these 16U tournaments. And yeah, man, I enjoyed that aspect of it. But it's kind of like, all right, it's hard to project like guys that are going to be in like 2025 or 2026. And the way my mind operates, that's like 10 years from now. But yeah, Italy does have some talent. So you're saying that you would draft him?
I would definitely draft him. I don't think I would take him with a guaranteed contract that first round or something like that. But if it came down to like 45, 60, I think you're getting good value. And I don't know how high that value is, but you're getting like better than that 45 to 60 range.
Yeah, I definitely think that he's someone that you can stash, kind of like the Celtics did last year with Juan Bergarin, and probably Americanized that. And even like Bogdan Bogdanovic, he was drafted by Phoenix, I believe, and he didn't come over right away. So yeah, I mean, I like that. All right, last question, and this may be kind of redundant with the question I just was asking. Who is your biggest sleeper?
Oh man. Yeah, there's two, and you know who these two are going to be. You know who one of them is without a doubt. Mike Miles from TCU and Isaiah Wong. I really do like Isaiah Wong.
Yeah.
I wish he could shoot a little bit smoother, though, because he does like a windmill where his shot goes like all the way around. But that's my big concern for him, that he's going to have to do that to fix that to make it. But Mike Miles is absolutely my guy. I think the FIBA U19s are a great example of how much better he plays with top-end talent.
Yeah, I mean, you can say that he was – everything for TCU. He had to do a lot. I've you know, I live in Dallas. So I had a chance to watch him work out. Actually, he worked out with like Jamias Ramsey 2 summers ago. I went to quite a few workouts, and depending on if he's, you know, going to be in Dallas, and I definitely want to watch him work out again. But you have been high on Miles and definitely Wong. I feel like if Isaiah Wong is drafted, he owes you like something. Send you some Nikes or something. Invite you to the draft, because it's been like 2 or 3 years since you've been talking about him.
So, hey, I appreciate that. Yeah, I'm a sucker though, because like I think he's got an argument for best base creator in the class, and he's 6'3", really athletic, high IQ. I think he knows how to use his tools. Again, just comes down to that jump shot. If he can't shoot, he's not going to stick. But if he can shoot, I mean, he's going to stay.
Yep. All right, man. Thanks a lot for coming on. This is Richard Stamen from Mavs Draft. We kind of shot the breeze, but we're more so just kind of talking about the ESPN high school rankings, which, I mean, it's such a crapshoot, because you just never – I mean, it's like the NBA Draft, too. It's just these rankings absolutely mean nothing once you get to college, on one hand. But then on the other hand, we just talked about how it could actually help Patrick Baldwin get a first-round grade despite the production. All right, this is finally my very, very last question. Production or promise? What do you lean towards?
You know, I'm almost in the middle, because for draft prospects, I'm more of a process over results for young players just in general. I'm also a Magic fan, so I almost have to be. But like I think a blend. You don't want someone like some unknown, you know, 6'9" shooters at Milwaukee that can't produce. Just, you know, throwing some That's hypotheticals fine. Out of here.
Shot fired.
Some hypotheticals, like I think that is a massive red flag. But also, like, you know, if you can say, well, it's a little bit of unlucky, like I think there's a blend to it.
Yeah. And I mean, I had an agent send me a player, and he was like, check this guy out. So I watched the guy, very limited film, but it was like, okay, I gotta take notes on this guy. But the agent was looking like he should put his name in the draft. And on one hand, I don't know if teams know it, but I mean, he had what scouts are looking for: long, agile, skinny, shows flashes of being able to shoot, was like a late bloomer. That was, you know, the whole Anthony Davis story, was like a 6'2 guard, then shot up to 6'10. So he's like little awkward. So I saw the flashes, but I'm like, this kid could probably get drafted. All he needs is one team to like him. And despite him not having any production. So I always like to ask, like, what do you value more between production and promise? Well, all right, man, I took up enough of your time. For those that don't know who you are, because everybody in the draft world knows who you are, where can they find you and your social media and your content?
Hey, really appreciate the kind words, and thank you always for having me on. At Mavs Draft is pretty much the hub. I post everything I do on Twitter. So anything I put on MavsDraft.com for like big boards, mock drafts, scouting reports, all that, it'll also be on my Twitter. You'll find a link through there.
Cool. Well, I can break the news now, but starting next week, me and Richard will have more shows together. We're going to be on the NBA Big Board feed 5 days a week. Just we'll have different guests on, but you'll get to hear more of Richard. Me and him will definitely be tag teaming a lot, and so he's like my go-to guy, so I'm looking forward to that, because I've been doing solo podcasts for the last 6 months, which is kind of tough with the time difference, but I think it's time for me to come home. All right, man, thanks again. I appreciate your time. This is Raphael, NBA Draft Junkies, NBA Big Board, signing out, and I am out. Once again, thank you for making Locked On NBA Draft your first listen of the day. Now, check out the Locked On NBA podcast. Locked On NBA experts are covering the biggest stories around the NBA every Monday through Friday, and they get it done in less than 30 minutes. It is free, and it is available wherever you get your podcasts.